Welcome to the Tech Savvy Professor Podcast, two faculty who love tech and love making it part of their work. I'm Marty Gentius from Kent State University.
And I'm Eric Perry, a clinical faculty from Southern New Hampshire University.
So, Eric, we did a few shows ahead of time so we could keep a weekly schedule, and I appreciate that. But you were in Italy. How was Italy?
Italy was fantastic. It's our first European trip. And I talked a lot about the tech that I took over there to kind of prepare. I'll be honest, I didn't use it as much as I thought I was going to. Really took the time to enjoy the trip. But for what I did use it for, I think it worked really, really well. So I started off talking about a tablet that I got to try, the S7, and moved on to a Chromebook, a Samsung Chromebook that I ended up taking with me. Really portable, really easy to use, and it's a full hybrid, so it will flip to a tablet. I actually used it in a tablet format a lot more than I thought I was going to for paper grading and that kind of thing on the plane, because there's not, you know, there's just not the room for, you know, the full setup. I'm not a small guy, so I take up a good bit of room, and, you know, having it sitting there, I had felt like I had my hands up against my chest.
You've got a little T-Rex thing going on there.
So my hands ended up cramping. So I tried it with a stylus and kind of the on-screen keyboard, and was surprised at how well it worked. You know, in the hotel rooms and using the adapters that we talked about on a previous show too, it worked fine. You know, internet connection was good. I didn't have any issues with speed and that kind of thing. But most of what I was doing was web-based. I didn't do any video or anything while I was over there. But it worked out really well. And I brought that second screen with me and set it up once, one of our longer stays, which a couple of days in Rome. And it was really nice to use. We actually used it to stream some US-based TV that wasn't an option while we were there.
So how did you handle being away from the kids, and how did the kids handle being away from you?
I think they were sad at first, and then grandparents took over and they kind of had free reign. I don't think anybody used the stove for a full week. Yeah. They were going out to eat and running around. So I think they enjoyed themselves. We were all happy to see each other, but they definitely got spoiled.
Well, while you were gone, I got a new iPhone 15 Pro Max replacing my 14. So my focus, you know, is on the new trophy wife, would be what you'd say. You know, she gets all the attention and all the money invested in it. And the old interesting piece of hardware, the Pixel Fold, I have been using less and less. And the place that I use it the most is in my automobile when I hook it up, because I like the Android auto system when it hooks in. It seemed to have been much more reliable than CarPlay was in my particular automobile. So I thought, well, am I going to keep this really expensive piece of equipment just for using as an interface for podcasts while I'm driving in the car? And my son said, you know, if the Android system works for you, just buy a really cheap Android phone, not really cheap, but a really cheap Android phone, and sell your expensive Pixel. Along with that, he also found a seller for me. So I went on and I looked and priced it on a variety of places. And, you know, once I didn't have the phone, then I didn't need all the phone cases. I didn't need the watch, because I have a watch that will sync with the phone, but not sync with anything else. So I did a package deal with one of his colleagues and got it all put together and gave them a good deal. They took it and they immediately deposited the money in my account. So that's been a shift. And whether or not I get another Android phone or I continue to, of course, I got in the car to go buy a new Android phone, plugged in my CarPlay, and it worked perfectly. And I saw all the little different changes in it now that I can do. And I got about halfway to the store and turned around and said, I'm not going to do this today. So who knows where we'll go with that. I might just, as long as CarPlay stays consistent with me, I won't find a need to to look for another phone. But now, of course, I have two numbers besides my original number, because I Mint Mobiled a new number when I took the Pixel Fold out of, you know, out of the mix. So I don't know what I'm going to do with all these phone numbers, but I'll have to find a place to put them or just cancel them. So that's new with me. I'm still adjusting to the new tech. I have the new watch, which will allow you to do the tap gestures. That will not occur until probably later this month. They'll do a software update where you can start doing that. So I can't talk about that, but I'm excited about that addition.
It's really interesting. I watched kind of a recap of the release and discussion about the gestures. And part of that, you know, Apple almost alluded to the fact that they're starting to train for the VR environment and some of the similar gestures that they want to use there.
Yeah, that's how I'm seeing it, because I'm planning as soon as I can. I know there's going to be a flood for it, is to get a Vision Pro, because that's a whole new platform for computing in it. All the videos show them using various gestures and hand movements for it. And so I figure this is just like Bandcamp for gestures that I'm going to play with the watch for a while. It'll get me used to doing it with the Vision Pro when I eventually get it. So,
yeah, it's neat for sure.
So this week we are going to talk about LMS, which is not a hip Euro pop band or Korean pop band. Why don't you explain a little bit about LMS is?
So LMS is an acronym, stands for Learning Management System. And you might have seen others out there. CMS is another one, Curriculum Management System. You know, there's various kind of acronyms that describe these, but essentially they're just a place to house course material, you know, and they can be used for anything from traditional courses to hybrid courses to fully online courses. Some of the big names there are Brightspace and D2L, Canvas and Blackboard. And then Google Classroom, Moodle, you know, there's tons and tons out there. And they're very, very different just in terms of how they tend to be used, their price points. Thought it would be interesting to talk about, because regardless of how you're teaching, you might find use for some of them. You might use them all the time, or you might use them very little. But I think sometimes they get underutilized for what they offer and the available resources that you have as part of these. So it's likely your institution has one that they use. If you're actively teaching, they generally, you know, take one, and that's where they house all their course materials. So that's kind of the LMS in a nutshell. So when you hear that term, they're talking about whatever course management system that they use to house their materials.
So what's your history with them? I have limited experience. I'll rattle off later the ones that I've worked on, and I have a few questions for our discussion point. But tell us a little bit about your experience with LMS.
Yeah, so prior to finishing my degree, my doctoral work in counselor education, I worked as an instructional designer and curriculum developer for a mental health agency. I did some work for private businesses and companies for their learning, a couple of trucking companies here, and in addition to higher ed and building and developing courses. So in doing that, I was trained as an LMS administrator for Blackboard and for D2L or Brightspace. So D2L and Brightspace are used interchangeably. Brightspace is the company. D2L is the actual learning platform. It stands for Desire to Learn. So I have a pretty considerable amount of experience with those. I've also developed within Canvas, Moodle, and Google Classroom, although to a lesser degree, and then some private systems that you might find at your work, things like Workday that can include training as a part of your job. So done quite a bit with these over the course of the years, but I'll talk a little bit just about the academic side. I have some pretty good opinions of what I like and don't like about each of them and where their kind of strengths and weaknesses lie. The premier for most that would consider to be Blackboard, right? Blackboard would be considered to be kind of the top tier Definitely the most expensive out there, although they do have a version called Blackboard Ultra that is a cheaper version.
You know, I did some online research just because I was trying to remember names of different systems I had used, and it says Blackboard is the number one used interface right now in the world. So it's a big name up there, and I've had experience with it. You've had experience with it. There are also, I found tons of things that were classified as LMS that are out there, and I don't know to what extent they're being used, but I haven't run across them personally, just the big four or five that we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, I mean, it's something even like OneDrive could be used as an LMS. Again, it's most basic form is just a place to house materials. The important part about that is how your learner navigates, right? And I think that's the biggest issue that I find between these. Is the two things that I talk about the most when we're talking about LMSs is the user experience, which is how your students are able to navigate, and the faculty side or the development side of those LMSs and how intuitive that process is. I think with Blackboard, because it's kind of this premier service, has the most, Blackboard and Canvas has the most ability to be adaptable, right? That's what they're made for. They're made for customization. There's a lot of options. They do have, like I said, lower tiers that are a lot more strict about what you can put in there and how you can change those in terms of look and feel. But they're pretty widely known. Students get acclimated to them pretty quickly. I don't think they're designed for adult learners as well as Desire to Learn, just in terms of that navigation part. Desire to Learn was really developed for an adult learner. So as someone who teaches graduate education, it was really appealing for me to learn a little bit more about that side. They tend to be really strict about what you change in terms of how that overall interface looks. And they do that because they want that navigation experience to be really similar across the board and really easy. So there are some customization options in terms of what you can provide students and how the course shell looks, but not to the tune of Blackboard or Canvas. Canvas is also another option that's a little less expensive than Blackboard and a little less expensive than Desire to Learn, but you'll notice when you try and look these up, they don't post these prices really readily. And the reason for that is they negotiate, and it's really dependent upon the number of users, your status as a university, whether you're nonprofit, private, public. They will negotiate these. They will for private entities as well. So if you're a nonprofit, say mental health agency, and you wanted to use one of these LMSs to train staff, for example, and provide trainings, you can get really good pricing depending on your status as a nonprofit. So they negotiate these pretty well, and you can actually bring these to the table. I've done it before. You can bring these price quotes to the table and pit them against each other.
So when you say status, if you have, like, you're a large nonprofit organization, you get a better deal per user or per whatever versus a mom and pop, small counseling agency, they would get probably a lesser per person, a greater per person cost, or how do you mean you get really good deals depending on your status?
It's like ordering in bulk. So you get your price per user down. The more users you have, it's a higher cost, but as a larger organization, you're able to absorb that a little easier. There are more friendly options out there. Google Classroom is one, right, which you can get essentially for free, kind of their basic tier service. But, you know, one of the things you want to think about is what you want to do with it. So D2L, Blackboard, Canvas have some really great options to integrate third-party tools that other services don't necessarily offer. So, you know, my institution, for example, does a lot with video, and we use a service called Bongo to integrate video and discussions and synchronous activities that is a part of the D2L learning environment. So we add that in into D2L to allow for those parts of the course.
Yesterday, I was sitting with a group of our international teachers, and they were learning about Google Classroom. Some of them have already set up and had set up sophisticated Google Classroom sites. And one of them said, oh, but you can do a grade book. This is how you do a grade book in Google Classroom. And then this morning when I was reading about Google Classroom, one of the complaints was, it can't be a true LMS unless you can have a grade book with it. Do you know anything about that?
You can. I actually, so I volunteer at a high school here. I teach AP Psych for them. And we use Google Classroom. I have a grade book integrated in there. So you can. It's part of Google Classroom. It's not as intuitive. Everything's kind of built out of the same classwork kind of level. So as you build content within that course, you add the items for the grade book. And as submissions come in, you have a grading area for it. But remember, you know, the really it's about the bells and whistles, right? So the grading experience in Google Classroom is a lot different from kind of a premium tier LMS like Blackboard.
Can you talk a little bit about Moodle? I had a little experience with Moodle because I was on a project that someone else had set up the Moodle site and they wanted me to take over running the Moodle site. The project never really got off the ground, and they were glad to kind of drop that whole piece. But for a while there, I was in there trying to figure out how to use Moodle open source. And I've seen other, particularly from other countries, people saying, yeah, we're using Moodle as our LMS. And I think I'm not sure about the support they can get from that. I think maybe there's a paid tier for support. Tell us a little bit about Moodle, because that's easy enough to do and launch in most cases and manage.
Well, and I think a lot of the reason that Google Classroom stays free and stays accessible is because Moodle is out there. It's not utilized quite as much, or I haven't seen it utilized as much as I did in the early days of kind of online education. Really quickly, it became apparent that there weren't platforms that were accessible for institutions or even individuals to provide these types of experiences. So this open source platform started, and it was really to accommodate MOOCs, which is this massive online course kind of format that had started out there. So it's open source. It does not have the levels of support that you might look for, but if you're resourceful and you love YouTube, there's tons out there on how to customize and how to walk through Moodle, develop your own and manage your own courses. Again, it has limitations in that, you know, you can't integrate these kind of third-party apps. There's not a lot of support in terms of IT support and development support. But, you know, it is another free option that's still out there. Last time I looked at it was maybe a year or two ago, and the updates were coming much less frequently. So some of the concerns that were coming up too is newer video and file formats and storage size really wasn't keeping up. I'd have to take a look back into it and see where they are now to really make a determination about it. But you don't see it used quite as much.
Well, I've had limited experience, as I mentioned. I go back to the WebCT days. I think that was the first platform we used here. I was doing offline instruction in a lot of other ways by creating my own websites and having students use that to get material. But to actually put it online with the university, I think I started WebCT. And then at some point they tagged on Vista to it, and or that was part of the Blackboard buyout of WebCT. And they had Blackboard and Blackboard Vista. Then they had Ultra, Blackboard Ultra. And currently we're working on Canvas. And that occurred in just the last 2 years. We switched from Blackboard and some level of Blackboard product. And I think it was probably cost. It was dissatisfaction. And I don't know if faculty are any more satisfied with Canvas, but that was an administrative decision. I'm one of those guys that does not like, I do a lot of what they call RTFM errors, which IT people know what that stands for. Read the manual. And, you know, when you don't read the manuals, you don't know the answers to these questions. But Google is a great place for me when it's like, how do I move this folder into this area on Canvas? type it into Google and you'll get a video, or you'll get a now with AI, you get a step-by-step stage of what you should do, and it works pretty well. So I don't have to embarrass myself by going to IT or our IT department to ask them how to do things when it's a RTFM error on my part. One of the things that I've done is I'm a staunch believer in intellectual property, and particularly the property that I create for my classes. For a while, the university was offering summer pay for people who wanted to go in and create a course for them, but the university would own the course. They'd own all the content. And I kind of saw them as academic scabs. They're sort of going in and doing the work, getting paid for and getting out of that, and actually jeopardizing the work that the rest of us do, because that's a big chunk of what we do. So I never got invested in those sorts of things, but I always got some concern that I can't house my videos on anything that is university related. For a while, there was a push for us to put everything on Kent State YouTube or KS YouTube, whatever it was. And I wasn't going to do any of that. So owning websites and owning space on servers, I've been able to put all of my digital material on that server, and everything in Canvas are links that point to that server. Mm-hmm. So Kent State can own that property that's on Canvas. They can own the links. But if for whatever reason I dissociate with Kent State, I can simply just change and move all of the material into a different folder, so it points, the pointers that are currently on the courses are go dead. They can own that course. They just won't have any of the material that goes with it. So that's my little tricky workaround, is to basically house my stuff offsite and on my own server for that purpose. And not that I think anything that I'm doing is golden and that it's going to be used and elevated by the university, but it does kind of help me keep my boundaries and helps them keep their boundaries.
Well, and it's something to be really, really careful of and to watch for as an academician, that the policies of your institution, because a lot of times whatever you do put on that LMS becomes their intellectual property. So, even if you look to take that content elsewhere, to teach and use it in another institution, you could be in violation of that policy. So you want to watch for that. Curated course models, a lot of the times there's opportunities to develop for those courses, and those courses are reused over and over again until they're updated. And oftentimes they'll pay for course development or subject matter experts to do that. You have to know what you're getting into. But, I've had that experience. I went to a conference once, a professional conference, and got to watch my own presentation with somebody else doing it. And, that's similar feeling. And then, obviously I had to correct a few things from the presentation that weren't portrayed properly, and then have a really awkward conversation with the presenters afterwards. And, it's a really weird feeling to see somebody use your material and your content without attributing it to you. So, beyond kind of just having some ownership over that, it feels something almost even more intimate than theft, because it's your ideas, it's your creativity that gets pulled out and reused by somebody else.
Yeah, but AI is going to scramble all that stuff up anyways for us and create a cloak of anonymity across all the material that we put anyways. So do you have anything more to say about LMS at this point?
The only thing I wanted to say was, it's about utility. It's about how you use it. And I think even when I teach a traditional course, there's ways in which it can make things really accessible for students. And I don't get paid by any of these LMS providers, but I enjoy Desire to Learn D2L probably the most for that, in terms of both the faculty side and the student side, just because it's really easy to put things in, to organize. It keeps, your files organized really well. And transferring courses to a new shell, so if you're going to reuse content, is pretty seamless. Surprisingly enough, some of these LMSs can have some issues bringing content over from previous sections and cause some problems. And I think D2L does a really nice job, even with like linked material, or like say you were to put in your announcement a link to an assignment that term, that link maintains for the new course section. You don't have to go in and change all of those again to point to the new course. You know, just little features like that, I think D2L does really, really well with. You know, so really look at it for utility. I love to create, you know, experiences for students that are more interactive. And I use Adobe Captivate for that. And some of the larger LMSs allow you to bring those experiences in, you know, have compatibility for those. So look at what you want to do, what you want to spend, if you're in a position to make those decisions, and really be intentful about how you use those.
Yeah, there are tons of plugins that if you scroll down generally to the bottom of the settings, you'll find all these different things that you can incorporate in it. Mm-hmm. We have Tavera, so our courses are connected to Tavera and on Canvas, and we have to go to that plugin to add that to the course when we're using it, or as we use it, I should say. I have never been a fan of online testing. I mean, I had to do it during COVID, had to have some way of doing it. Blackboard was hideous in creating online tests in terms of basically multiple choice options, which I don't like to do anyway. And just the putting the exam together was so tedious in the process of doing it. I use another service called ClassMarker, which I'm out of COVID, but I still use ClassMarker. It's a good service for putting together online exams, and it costs, but it's much easier to put things together that way. My preference is to give exams in the classroom, old school, paper and pencil, and yes, it's tedious because I have to grade that. But I get a better sense of what the learning process is than a series of multiple choice questions. And I get into less contextual arguments with students that you'll get into with online multiple tests, and particularly ones that are created by test banks from the book and et cetera, et cetera. I just avoid all that as much as I can, because I want them to be able to walk in the room at least that night and walk out of the room with a body of knowledge in their head that is they're going to apply. And I just don't get that from online testing. I still use ClassMarker for some of the online classes that I have. And it's once you start to build up a series of exams that you do class after class with that, it allows you to create test banks and do all sorts of things with it. So that's sort of the one external plugin I put or use when it comes to LMS systems.
Yeah, I can imagine we could do a whole show on quiz and test development and software. Because there's a lot of options out there. And the stuff within the LMS is regardless of the LMS you use, it tends to be really tedious. There is an option within Blackboard that I like that helps make that a little bit more intuitive, but it is a lot of clicking and saving.
Yeah.
And clicking and saving and moving between screens. Like you can't develop within the same kind of native screen, which sounds silly, but it takes up so much time, those additional clicks and movements, that it feels so tedious.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's all I've got on this. And I maybe we do talk about testing options, online testing options. Well, how can listeners get involved? Got a tech question, trying to figure out how to do something with technology, or you have an idea to share? Email us at thepodtalknetwork@gmail.com or call and leave a message at 330-333-1240, and we'll play your question in the podcast and try and get an answer for you. Our bumper music is from Philip Gross, Rast, from the Free Music Archive. That's it for today's show. Thanks for subscribing to the Tech Savvy Professor podcast. Everything you need to know is at TechSavvyProfessor.net. You can find us by searching Apple Podcasts for The Tech Savvy Professor. Look for us on Spotify, TuneIn, Google Play Music. Look for our other shows like Circular Firing Squad on thepodtalk.net. Thanks for listening to The Tech Savvy Professor.